Hello, Rejects. I'm Dave.
And I'm Brent. Welcome back to Rejected Central. We're going to do something a little different today. We are going to flip things around. Dave is going to take control and talk about a subject that's near and dear to his heart. And I got to say what a treat this is and how much respect I have for you for doing it. You see what I did there? And I will say to our listeners, have a look at our social media, at the posts we've made, and our website, and have a look at our subject for today, and then have a look at a picture of our good friend Dave here, and let me know. I'm thinking doppelganger myself, but you should let me know if you think the same thing. I could be a little bit biased. So, all right. So, without further ado, Dave takes control.
A great honor this is. Thank you, Brent. Today on Rejected Central, we are going to talk about a comedian who, in his first attempt at being in entertainment, quit the business and he, and I quote, was the only one who knew I quit. If you could imagine such a thing, Brent. He rejoined the entertainment business.
What, quitting? I can imagine quitting.
Well, then you'll love this guy. He rejoined the entertainment business as a, as Adam Sandler says, a grown-ass man. And to this day, he remains legendary for his quick one-liners, depreciating humor, and hero and mentor to many comedians and entertainers. Admittedly, he was a terrible actor, but he starred in over 20 movies.
I would say, yes. Yes. I didn't do much prep for today, but I did go back to a few snippets, and he was not great.
No, Seinfeld-esque even. This person wasn't necessarily rejected by Hollywood until later on, but his entire act was based on rejection. He felt rejected, but why?
Because he got no respect at all. Today, we get to talk about, well, Dave gets to talk about, because he's been doing the deep dive on this, the life and career of Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney Dangerfield was born Jacob Rodney Cohen on November 22nd, 1921 in Deer Park, New York. He was the son of Dorothy and vaudevillian performer Philip Cohen.
It's interesting that he changed his name. I think a lot of performers did that, particularly in that time period with all of the anti-Jewish sentiment in Hollywood and in show business. Yeah, it's a pretty common story, actually.
So Rodney only saw his dad around once or twice a year before, unfortunately, he abandoned the family.
Well, it doesn't sound like he had much to abandon, like in terms of he was already not there.
Already kind of not there, but now he's definitely not there. Right. There was no affection or support shown in his family, and especially his mother, which may have planted those rejection seeds early on.
Oh, I'd love rejection seeds. I'm sorry, I'm biased.
During his teenage years, he began to write stand-up for other comedians in New York, but was financially desperate for years. He became a singing waiter, which...
Oh, I'm picturing it.
His singing, I imagine, is probably just as good as his acting.
And his sales life. You mentioned before we started recording that he became an aluminum siding salesperson.
Aluminum siding salesman, yeah.
Which I think you'd be really good at, by the way.
I could sell you some siding.
You could sell me some siding.
In the 1960s, he resumed his career in comedy. I guess the aluminum siding salesperson thing wasn't doing it for him anymore. But he realized he needed an image or a shtick. While creating his Unlucky Guy material, he overheard a low-level gangster saying that he got no respect. No respect at all.
Sounds familiar.
Obviously foundational there. He created the name Rodney Dangerfield. Now, why Rodney Dangerfield? That name came up from the Jack Benny show in 1941. He took that character.
It was a character on the...
On the Jack Benny show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
In 1941. So he took that name. He created the name Rodney Dangerfield by 1967 due to his no respect at all gimmick. He was on the Ed Sullivan show as a replacement, and he became the surprise hit. Now, Brent, you know a little bit about Ed Sullivan.
I do. Not much.
Must have been tough to crack that egg, eh?
Yeah, that level of stardom, it's such a small percentage of people who hope to do well in those areas. Like, nobody gets to that level, really. Nobody. You know, everybody aspires to it, such as certain writers would aspire to being bestsellers and that kind of thing. Not that I can relate to that at all, but so, yeah, no, that would be something. So Ed saw something in him and the audience must have responded as well.
Yeah. And speaking of Ed Sullivan and the late show, the night shows, things like that, he was on the Tonight Show. Brent, I would love to ask you, how many times do you think?
I've never been on the Tonight Show.
Not yet.
Right. Sorry, maybe that's not what you were going to ask.
It's not a growth mindset question.
Got to stop interrupting. Question. Sorry.
It's not growth mindset. It's history. Would you like to take a shot at how many times he was on The Tonight Show?
I don't know. 50?
You're actually close. It's 70.
Oh, okay.
He appeared on The Tonight Show over 70 times. And speaking to your point...
That's crazy.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it happens every night, you know, The Tonight Show. So there's a lot of shows. But then you look at just that, like, he would have had to have been on like once a week for a long time.
And how narrow it is too. I mean, how many late night shows were there?
I don't know.
There couldn't have been that many, right?
All right. But there's a question for Dr. Google.
Dr. Google. So 70 times. And we were talking earlier about, you know, the pinnacle of success as a rising comedian, The Tonight Show is it.
It would be, yeah.
It was it. And
it's kind of like getting an invitation nowadays to appear on Total Brain Fart.
On Rejected Central.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the pinnacle.
Yeah. Yeah. So to get there 70 times, and Carson would always, if he liked you, he would invite you over to the couch. So, I mean, you know, Rodney, you can imagine what Rodney would have been like on The Tonight Show. It's just like jokes. You'll sit down, more material, later discussion, even more material. There was actually no discussion between them. If you go back, go to YouTube and watch a Rodney Dangerfield Tonight Show clip.
So it's not like he switches off to go to the couch like comedians do nowadays when they talk to the host. He just kept going.
He's still working.
I wonder, was he like that in person, do you think?
I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Because, you know, you can have a different response to that. You can either love that or you want to kill the person after a while if they never switch off, too.
Yeah. That would be tough, yeah. But he starred in over 20 films.
Even though he was a bad actor.
He was pretty terrible.
I mean, I know very few. Caddyshack is one.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the one that I think of when I think of him doing his shtick, right? Mm-hmm. And then he had like lots of little cameos and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't pull that out of the front part of my brain very easily at all.
So Caddyshack was the breakout.
Right.
The breakout hit. There's a great story from Harold Ramis, the director.
Okay.
There's a really great story about how he'd never done a movie before. This was his first movie. So when Ramis said to Rodney, action... he would just look around, just like standing there. He didn't know what to do. So Harold said, are you okay, Rodney? He goes, yeah, I'm okay. He says, well, what's going on? He says, I'm just waiting for you to tell me what to do.
I did.
So
I just said action.
So he goes, okay, next time I yell action, just do your bit. And he goes, okay. So he says, action. And he just stood there. He goes, then Harold Ramis says, Rodney, do your bit. And he did the bit in the golf store, like the... you know, the clubhouse, getting shirts and stuff like that. Hey, that hat looks like a great bowl of soup. And it does the eye roll. That whole scene was done in one shot perfectly.
Okay. Right.
It was all done one shot. But it's just, Ramis thought it was so funny that he didn't know what to do, how to start. But once he got started, it was absolute perfection.
Now, you have to be pretty detached from things not to know what action and cut and, you know, that kind of stuff would mean in a film. I mean, everybody knows that, right?
Yeah.
You'd think, anyway.
Yeah. A lot of us might. Rodney was also famous. You might remember. Well, I'll just throw this out there to you, Brent. Tastes great, less filling.
I know that saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having trouble picturing it though.
Those are Miller Lite commercials. You might remember those from the mid '80s. It had Rodney was in them. Bob Uecker was in them.
Oh, there it is. Yes.
They're always in the bar. They're tastes great, less filling. So he was a big part of that in the '80s. Made a lot of money from that.
Uh huh.
He had a nightclub called Dangerfields. Shockingly original.
Where was it?
In New York.
Okay.
He opened it up a couple of blocks away to be a better father to his kids.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah. Which makes sense because, you know, I imagine he has, you know, he had a really rough go as a child. And
yeah.
Having a dad not around.
It's nice to hear that shift back towards the family rather than away from it. Unfortunately, we just hear so often about people who were neglected, people who had terrible family lives. And partially it's because of what we're exposed to in the media, but we hear about the fact that they carry that tradition, if you will, on, and they don't take care of their families. So it's nice to hear the other side.
Yeah. He went the other way. He decided he needed to be around his family more often. He's been on the road for so long, made a lot of sacrifices. So yeah, it was the next logical step. And also it was a great opportunity It was a great opportunity for him to try out new material like right away because he was very famous.
Kind of like
was...
we do here on Rejected Central. Hey. That's right. What do you want to do with your life? I don't know, but let's start a podcast so we can practice things.
We make some farts. We make smart financial decisions here.
It's like I'm you know, I've actually entertained the idea of starting a publisher just so that I could a publishing house just so I could publish my own work.
Why not?
Well, you can, and you could, but you can self-publish so easily nowadays as well. But it would be convenient.
He was thinking that years ago.
Oh, no rejection for this guy. Wonder why?
Yeah. He was very famous for walking the two blocks to the club in his nightgown. And just getting up on stage and trying out those jokes right away. Like he had to know right away.
Oh, that's spectacular.
He had to know right away.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And the list of comedians who went through Dangerfield is basically a who's who of the 80s and
right.
90s and things like that. Would you like to take a shot at who headlined Dangerfields back in the 80s? Do you want, like, I can throw out a couple of names for you that might surprise you a little.
Okay. Let me take a shot at it. Okay. 80s, 90s comedians. Arsenio Hall.
Yes.
Okay. What's his name? Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Yes.
It's not Tim. Is it Tim Taylor in real life?
It's
Tim Tebow.
I'm Tim kidding. Allen.
Tim Allen. Thank you. Who else? Eddie Murphy.
No, he was already on Saturday Night Live then, but I can read you.
His Eddie team Murphy was too was big already, at that point.
Okay. He was already too big. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell I'm having trouble remembering comedians from the 80s?
Well, I am putting you on the spot, and it is early morning. We are recording early morning here.
And are folks. We talking more 80s or more 90s?
I guess more 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's even harder. I wasn't really watching comedy in the 80s. I really started in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
I was an infant in the 80s, of course.
Of course.
Right.
As some of us are.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, us young whippersnappers.
What?
Barely a glimmer in the 80s. I mean, come on.
So I'll give you some names.
Yeah.
That may surprise you and may delight you. Sam Kinison.
I have no idea who that is.
Sam Kinison.
Sure, oh. I'm terrible with names. So if you were to put him up on a screen, I'm sure I'd recognize it. Like that's the way I do a lot of name recognition.
Do you remember Back to School?
Back to School.
The Ronnie movie when he went back to school?
I know the name of it. I don't remember the movie.
He was the professor who yelled and screamed at Ronnie in history. He was the history professor. He was the one who freaked out about a question in Vietnam.
Yeah, no.
I know you know this guy.
Yeah, it's probably a visual for me.
I know you know this person, Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah, that is vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
Yes, we can't say anything that he said, of course.
Not then or now.
He has toned it back.
Oh, yeah.
He has toned it down. He's Andrew Clay now, right? He's not Dice anymore.
Oh, so he's legit.
He has tried to become more respectable. Particularly with the move to Hollywood, like he's tried to become more of an actor.
Yeah.
So.
Roseanne?
No, I don't know that name at all. Sorry, I'm lying. Yeah, no. Yeah, see, now that's a name that I easily can picture, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Roseanne. Plus, of course, we have this, maybe she'd be an interesting one for a bell curve, because she has just gone up and down and all around.
Oh, yeah.
Media darling, villain. She's okay again. Villain.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw her. She's doing a voice for an animated thing right now, and I can't think of the name of it. Kind of in the style of American Dad and Futurama and all that stuff. Kind of an adult. I don't want to say adult, actually. I should say for grown-ups. Somebody the other day, she's like,
people.
I can't say adult book now because it just conjures different things.
Correct.
All right, who else?
Jay Leno.
Yes. Oh, speaking of the Tonight Show, right? Yeah.
Jay Leno used to, a lot of these comedians, including Jay Leno, used to sleep. He used to, Roddy, if they had no place to stay, they would stay in his restaurant.
It's interesting. I mean, we have Jay Leno, we have Roseanne, and Andrew Clay. Well, I don't know about Andrew Clay. I don't really know that much about him, but I know people like Jay Leno and Roseanne. They seem to get more negative media attention the older they get.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Ray Romano.
Ah, everybody loves Raymond.
Everybody loves Raymond.
Was that too easy? That might have been too easy.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Mm.
Up and comer.
Yeah, who's that? I'm just kidding.
He never made anything of himself.
We're actually recording this just before Christmas, and my Facebook feed has been just flooded with Festivus references. Yeah. So that's very relevant to right now. But of course, by the time we put this episode up, it'll be closer to Valentine's Day, I think. So
Chris Rock.
Yep, know that name.
And Bob Saget.
I think a bullet should cost $1,000. Chris Rock. Bob Saget. Oh, there's another one that has, some of the stuff that Bob Saget. And Bob Saget, I have this sensitivity to bad language. Mm-hmm. I don't have a thing against swearing or profanity or anything like that. In fact, my characters, when it's called for, they can swear the air blue sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I do have a little bit of a problem with the excessive use of profanity and obscene and just gross things. My first exposure to Bob Saget, like millions of people, was through Full House. Mm-hmm. And then later on, somebody sent me a few YouTube clips of him doing stand-up. And what a filthy man.
Yeah.
In general, when it comes to comedy, although I'm not, you know, I don't mind something that's colorful or that's, you know, even a little bit gross, tiny bit. Mm-hmm. Wow. It was shocking at the things that were coming out of his mouth. And I'm like, he's a grown man saying these things. Maybe that's a separate episode.
Yeah.
Rejecting bad comedy. I don't know. I just find the whole, you know, the guy's in his, what is he, 60s now?
He's
70s?
Yeah, he's passed. Yeah, he passed.
Oh, he did pass. That's right, he did. And this is a guy, a senior citizen, talking like a teenage boy who's still masturbating under the covers at night. You know what I mean? Like it was that kind of, I'm like, come on, come on. Like some comedians are really good at reflecting the age that they are. Mm-hmm. I think David Letterman does a really good job of that. I think there's a number of comedians that are just, they don't try to deny who they are, but I just had the feeling while I was watching Bob Saget, man, this guy is just in denial.
Yeah.
He's stuck in his puerile teenage masturbatory days, you know, like that was really crazy. We may have digressed there a little bit. All right. Anybody else?
It's like a frat boy that never drank.
Yeah. That's right. And not letting go of that. Just the inability to just let go. It's so sad.
Terrible.
I'm so judgmental, but it's so sad.
Oh, we're sitting here in our high perches.
Yes. We did establish this as the pinnacle, right? This is where people want to be.
Rejected Central,
folks. As you and I sit here by ourselves talking to each other.
So here's one of my more favorite factoids about our man, Rodney.
Lay it on me.
All right. He is actually quite the pioneer. In 1995...
Pioneer of what? Or are you about to get to
that? I'm about to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
In 1995, he became the first person, not just in comedy, not in movies, not in entertainment, but he became the first entertainer to create a website.
Really?
The very first one. Yeah.
Okay. That does blow my mind. Mm-hmm. We think of where we are now.
Yep.
And how virtually everything is instantly accessible on our smartphones in front of us. And that he was the first. And that's been proven. Like that's he was actually the first person, like the first entertainer,
the first entertainer.
Kind of public figure to have a website in 1995.
Rodney.com, by the way, still active.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, well, guess who's going to lose a little time in the rabbit hole after this?
Yeah, you're gonna want to.
I will. Yeah. I had fun choosing a picture for our social media posts. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine I'm just going to, I'm going to have to tell my wife, I'll see you in a couple of days.
In 1995, I mean, if you're on the World Wide Web, I mean, what are you looking for?
Well, I'm sure as, you know, they were looking for the things that they're looking for now that we can't talk about on this Safe for Work podcast. But actually, I remember coming home from Australia. I had spent a year in Australia, New Zealand, and coming back to look for work. This was 96 now, so about the same time. I mean, the only thing online was people populating it with sort of personal interest websites. Yes, there was a lot of porn already at that point. Allegedly, I never looked at it, of course. But there was also a lot of government stuff, government-supported websites like informational job hunting. So it was really interesting to actually be clicking on job postings rather than circling them in the actual newspaper at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And we think now about the job hunt and just how it's like a lot of things. People who put a job posting online, they just get flooded. But back then, if you responded to a job posting online, it was actually quite novel. Like if you told an interviewer, oh, yeah, I got it online. They're like, whoa, because that was how new the whole thing was in 1995. So I remember doing a session in when I lived in Kuwait on the World Wide Web and the history of the internet. And I don't even remember what I was doing it for, but I was looking at its origins as a military technology to allow missile silos to talk to each other in the event of nuclear war, and its evolution from there. But looking at just how rudimentary it was right through, and that was in the late 70s, I think, if I remember correctly, and then it wasn't really used by anybody else until 92, 93, when chat groups would happen online, and then by 95, there were actual websites. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so Rodney got to be the first. That's really cool.
Yeah. That's just such a great fact. I mean,
like, it is. Yes. My mind was indeed blown. Thank you for that, for blowing my mind.
I told you I would.
You did.
Unfortunately, like all great comedians, there's, you know, with that humor, there's a lot of stuff that goes underneath, right? There's a lot of things that go on. So Rodney had a really difficult upbringing. As you know, we spoke earlier about
his childhood, the absent father. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of stuff. Yeah.
So yeah. The mother was basically gone throughout his entire childhood. There's stories about
even after his father had left as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially during then. Yeah. Okay. Especially during then. I think she took it really hard, but yeah, he was left on his own for long periods of time. There was no emotional support, no love, that sort of thing. So,
right.
I mean, you hate to say it, but the foundation of his humor is probably based on a lot of that pain, right?
Oh, it's so painful to watch.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, I mean, it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
You laugh. But like a lot of the best comedy and humor, it's a little bit painful to laugh at it, right? Mm-hmm. Because the best stuff kind of digs a little at us too. And it really meets where we are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, watching him is painful and sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, but it's so sad. Like, he just looked tortured all the time.
Roseanne made a really great point about Rodney. You know, he's like the every guy, you know, he's like the guy you want to root for.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. And she says, you know, in the constant tie shaking, it's like he realizes what I'm about to tell you is awful, but hang in there. You know what I mean?
Right. That's a good analogy. You know, yeah.
I mean, I could lift you 1,000 Rodney one-liners, but one of my favorites is, my wife just bought a pressure cooker. Now we eat off the ceiling. And, you know, he does that, that tie shake, you know, it's like, he's literally trying to choke down his own nonsense.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so people feel like, you know, they feel like empathy or compassion, some sort of compassion for him.
Yeah. And of course his appearance looking so everyday, mm-hmm, and hard and haggard. And, you know, he had struggles with weight, I don't even know him that well, but I just can, you know, even looking at pictures, trying to, for their social media posts, looking at all of that range of his appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was he enjoyed the nightlife.
We'll, you know, I'm that. Not, you
yeah,
know,
direct, that's not a judgment.
No, not at all. And I was going to say, I'm not directly doppelgangering you with regards to how terrible he looked, for the record.
2023 you, Dave.
That's right. We'll be putting you on social media next.
But yeah, another great Roseanne comment was that he didn't actually tell stand-up material, as the way he presented his stand-up material was like a joke necklace, right? So like, you know, you have those beads on a necklace. Remember those candy cane necklaces?
Right,
those
little candy
necklaces you had as a kid?
Yeah.
It's basically like that. You know, say one joke, take one bite. Say one joke, take another bite. And basically his whole material was like a necklace full of jokes. Like, he never told, his stand-up was never polished. It was not the
build-up.
Yeah.
Or callbacks or anything like that. It was just boom, 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 boom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's an interesting, that's a good metaphor for that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A joke necklace.
And then when he finally realized he was out of candies, he was done his show, I guess.
Yeah. He was always in that sort of cheap looking suit, you know, like tie, mm-hmm, you know, this basic tie, you know, he's always sweating and moving around and checking out the room. It's like, you know, he was waiting to get like bounced at any second.
Well, it did. And I made assumptions at that time as to why he looked like that, because it was so different than the polish, the carefully coiffed hair or cut hair. It was the opposite. And you make assumptions about that. You make assumptions that it's drugs, or you make assumptions that he's drunk, or anything like that. Was there any truth to that, or was that just his shtick?
No, there is
a lot
of that.
All right. So he was also struggling with some of the substances and that kind of thing as well. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. He had a lot of, he, in his later years, he spoke pretty openly about his mental health issues, you know, like stemming from his childhood. You know, leaving his first wife, because basically when he went back on the road again, that was the beginning of the end of their marriage.
Okay. Okay.
You know, because I don't think, finger quotes, Mrs. Dangerfield wanted him back out there.
Yeah.
And also,
well, going on the road can be hard on any marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with someone, you know, that we're learning about, with all of the struggles he was facing as well, that he would carry with him onto the road. And
yeah.
And leaving her. Did they have kids at that point?
Raising kids, yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Raising kids. And also, not only are you like the king of the stand-up comedy route right now, but you're getting into movies too.
Right.
You know, and all the pressure and fame and money that comes with that too. Right. And you know, being a grown-ass man, as Adam Sandler said earlier.
Yeah, well, and again, we've mentioned that it's a common story. Like there are common threads through a lot of fame stories, right? Mm. And the fall into the bad stuff is pretty common as well.
Yeah. And I want to leave you with a final amazing Rodney trivia bit.
Okay.
Okay. You're going to love this. You might remember Rodney Dangerfield was also in Natural Born Killers. He played...
No, I don't. That's one of those movies that it was at a time when I wasn't into that choreographed, orchestrated violence that Tarantino has become known for, and the foul banter between his characters. I wasn't into it. I'm still not really into it, but now I can appreciate the genius in Tarantino's method. Mm-hmm. I don't enjoy his movies at all,
but
I get why people do. That was a movie that I saw and just immediately forgot, which is why I can't even picture any scenes in that movie. I can just picture the movie poster.
Mm-hmm. He was Juliette Lewis's father. I can't remember her name in the movie, but
one of the natural born killers.
Yeah. The other half of the natural born killers.
Is it the better half? Would one of them say that the other one was the better half?
Tune in to the next episode of.
That's right. We're gonna talk about that in depth. No, we're not.
and we're thankful for that.
And we are.
He played Juliette Lewis's father in the movie and played a complete creepy guy, not that bouncy, drunken uncle.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Let's have a party. You know, it wasn't that guy at
all. You're so good at that.
Thank you. Well, I am his doppelganger.
Well, and you have his voice doppelganger. Doppelganging.
You know, there was no 80s music going on and a drink just being passed into your hand at the time, right? That's every one of his movies. But he played quite a character. And if you haven't seen Natural Born Killers, go back and watch. If you're not into those kind of movies, at least watch the scenes with Rodney in it, because you won't believe it's him.
And he plays it straight.
Plays it completely straight. Okay, like a dirty, creepy, straight guy.
Because if anything, you just don't say that it's funny watching those movies.
It's not funny
that
at all.
That movie's not funny
at all. Incredibly, he was up for a Best Supporting Actor Oscar.
Cool. Good for him.
Like Rodney Dangerfield. Okay.
Yeah. Playing it straight like we were talking about.
Playing it straight.
Oh, wow. Good for him.
So in the ultimate act, in a I don't know. I'll just come out and say this. Okay. He was up for his Best Supporting Actor Oscar.
Right.
Why didn't he get it? Because he didn't feel a membership in Screen Actors Guild was worth it. So he wasn't nominated.
They couldn't nominate him because he wasn't a member of the guild.
The ultimate rejection.
Boy, that seems awfully, I mean, yes, it's a rejection, but it seems so pedantic that someone who achieved such a moment of great art, and I'm assuming, because I don't know the scene, to deny him an award based on some little bit of administrivia like that just seems so wrong.
Yeah.
Wow.
The ultimate lack of respect, eh?
There you go. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Rodney Dangerfield, Best Actor. I would have loved to have seen that.
His acceptance speech.
Yeah.
They literally would have had to grab one of those canes and pull them off by the neck, I think.
Hey, this thing ain't made of chocolate.
That's right. I never met a man named Oscar I didn't like. See, I can't do that. But you can. You've got it right at the tip of your tongue.
Yeah, they say a hard man is good to find. Leave that out. But that's Rodney Dangerfield.
Thanks for that, man. Yeah, learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I am, again, going to lose some time in my life, I think, jumping onto the Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks. Awesome.
You're welcome.
Well, I get to do a huge thank you to the person sitting across the table from me right now. Thank you, Dave,
for your
excellent presentation of Rodney Dangerfield. Again, so much I don't know. He's instinctively familiar to me, being a child of the 80s and 90s. I know him, but I didn't know him. So thanks for that. That's great.
He's a fascinating person.
Indeed.
As always, we're looking for your stories. Reach out through rejectedcentral.com. Email us at rejectedcentral8@gmail.com or through social media.
And we are just so excited to hear from you. We've had a few episodes where our listeners have been the feature. We'd love to have more. So by all means, reach out. You don't even have to use your real name. Nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Again, thanks, Dave, for being here today with me, as always, but in particular for presenting Rodney Dangerfield to us. And thank you to the listeners. And we'll see you next time.
You're welcome. And so long.
I think we've got enough.